We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back to the John Chuckery Show, start of the Brown Liquor Music Hour. One more hour to go with you here. Don't forget the radio.com app to catch us anywhere that you may be on the go. We know you're not spending as much time in the car, so download that app so you can catch us wherever you may be. Chuckery always gets the first request, little Barry White to get us going. This is actually my favorite Barry White song. I'm going to love you just a little bit more. I didn't mean that to you, Jarvis. I meant that in a metaphorical sense. Anyway, follow us on social media. It's all at 929TheGame, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the different platforms there. Check us out on Twitter. We're going to talk about at 1040 the teams that Jarvis and I put together of the best NFL team of all time. Best way to keep up with us is on our personal social media pages. I am at JMCH316, at JMCH316. That is all your water cooler talking points, 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. I do want to thank a lot of folks for jumping on board with Twitter. Jarvis, we've been trying to get the drive for five, trying to hit the 5,000 Twitter followers. And we've kind of pushed it over the last week or so. We're up to 4,941 follower. So let's get to 5,000 Twitter followers and give us an audience, help build that social media audience. Obviously, you know, a lot of crazy times that we live in and stuff like that, so you can be a little bit more, you know, direct and talk with us some more directly on social media at JMCH316. He's back in Midtown producing the show. Jarvis is in the building at JarvisD90, at JarvisD90. Let's get to an NFL squib kick.
Taking a look at the NFL with the Squib Kick with John Chuckery, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We talked about this story just briefly with Josh Alper. You can catch that interview online at 92thegame.com, or if you go on the radio.com app, you can listen to anything back in real time over the past 24 hours on the station. So Tua Tagovailoa, who is coming back obviously from injury that ended his season at Alabama. The president and COO of Sports and Entertainment, Chris Abbott, told our friend of the show at Yahoo Sports, Eric Edholm, that Tagovailoa is fully cleared and, quote-unquote, ready to compete without any restrictions. So Dr. Chip Rout, repaired Tagovailoa's injured hip during a November 18th surgery in Houston. He then returned to Alabama for 3 months of rehab at the Andrews Sports Medicine and Orthopedic Center. Dr. Lyle Kane, an orthopedic surgeon on sports medicine at Andrews Center, deems Tagovailoa's progress remarkable. I'm extremely pleased. If you told me almost 5 months ago now that he'd be where he is now, I think I would have been very happy. I think he's done extremely well for where he started out. And he posted on Twitter, did Tagovailoa a workout that he was doing in Nashville with Trent Dilfer out there. So good for him. Look, we all assume and expect Joe Burrow to be the top quarterback that will be taken in the draft. No reason to think that he won't be the number one overall pick, as many people think, unless there's just some kind of miraculous change about what happens. But he's going to be. But the next most intriguing quarterback and the guy that I think teams will be looking to try to trade up to get whatever spot that is Tagovailoa. He's a very interesting case. When you look at what he did at Alabama and running that offense, you know, it was unlike anything that anybody has ever seen at Alabama. You know, Alabama's had some quarterbacks that could just huck it downfield, one superstar wide receiver, but this was a collection of four first-round NFL guys, two coming out this year, two they're going to be coming out next year, and a guy who could just, with precision, just hit guys over the middle in stride and watch those guys just run and take off. So He's a very intriguing prospect, whether that's the Dolphins or somebody else who's very much interested in him. If there is, and we talk about this with Josh Alper, if there is a guy that once you get past Chase Young and Tua Tagovailoa, once you get past Joe Burrow and Chase Young at 1-2, who's the guy that teams may want to look up and try to get? I think Tua is the guy at quarterback. Now, the Texans, who gave up like everything in their franchise to get Laremy Tunsil. Now, remember Laremy Tunsil on draft night, where the video came out of him in the mask, smoking a bong and all this kind of stuff? Of course, they gave up two first-round draft picks and a second-rounder to get Tunsil and Kenny Stills from the Dolphins, did the Texans. And now, with Tunsil becoming a free agent, which will be next year, he is under contract this season for $10.35 million. He's looking for a deal that's going to average more than $20 million per year. Now, it says here that Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle reported that the Texans' initial offer averaged $18.5 million per year. Tunsil's counteroffer, quote-unquote, significantly higher. Eagles right tackle Lane Johnson signed a four-year, $72 million extension in November with an $18 million per average, leading all offensive linemen. It says Tunsil wants at least 20. And the Texans have $35 million in cap space right now available to do something with. So if they wanted to go in there and try to make a big deal. But look, if you give up two first-round draft picks in a second and you let that guy walk and you've won nothing for it, might be time to fire your GM. Seriously. If your GM lets a guy like that walk after what you've given up and the fact that you haven't won anything with him, time to start looking for a new GM. And that may be harsh, that may not be nice, but the reality is that two first-rounders and a second-rounder for a guy, and you're not going to sign him to another contract. Can't do it. Can't do it. You got to find a way to get him signed, and yeah, it's probably going to hurt a lot when you do it. But at the same time, that's a guy that you can't let him walk, and you can't let him become a free agent. Now, this is an interesting story, kind of funny. Sean Payton, of course, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, who was the first person associated in the NFL to be diagnosed positive with the coronavirus, the COVID-19, earlier this month. So while he's at home and recovering and things like that, and by all accounts, God bless that he's doing well. He may be a Saint, but still, we don't want anything to happen to these guys. So on social media, on Twitter, he's been putting out plays in his offensive playbook. Said he shared some plays and the meaning behind the terminology of calls like gun empty, RT, Quizno 52, all go special, X shallow cross. I tell you, man, that's my second favorite play, man. My favorite play is Spider Y2 Banana Home Depot. Anyway, he's been sharing his plays in response to a question about his favorite play from an empty formation. And he says, I quickly drew one up on paper and took a picture of one of our plays, posted it, then just continued, telling Mike Triplett of ESPN.com in a text. He wrote that more plays are to come and brushed off concerns about giving away too much to NFC South defense coordinators because they've already seen these calls in action. He's right. I mean, there's only, I mean, listen, guys will add wrinkles and stuff like that to, you know, whatever plays that they call. But by and large, the formations and things like that, look, the Falcons have seen this for years now, right? I mean, how long has Sean Payton been the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, for God's sakes? So, you know, listen, that's not a big deal. Not to me, at least, out there. So, also, too, story coming out about how Tom Brady basically sold himself to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, that may sound kind of crazy, you know, but listen, whatever you got to do, man, to get to the team that you wanted to. And it just the whole time made too much sense for him to be going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Story is that Bruce Arians and Jason, is it Light, L-I-C-H-T, the general manager for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, said Brady did most of the talking when they got together. The GM said, we had a great conversation, Bruce and I. We talked to him for over an hour and a half. And he made it clear in the conversation that he was very, very interested. It was almost like a recruitment on his part, telling us why it would make sense for him to come to Tampa Bay. The next call we made, we signed him. But it was at that phone call that we realized that we felt like we had him. Now, look, if Tom Brady says to your franchise, I don't care what your franchise is, I don't care who you have at quarterback, if Tom Brady says, I want to come play for your franchise, that's not a very hard decision at all to make, is it? At least they didn't screw it up and not get out of their own way. But that's an easy decision as you possibly can have. In being asked about, hey, at 42 years old, is Tom Brady slowing down? Is his arm declining? They said that the tape showed us that he had plenty of arm. In fact, we thought that he had an ideal arm for Bruce in his system. And that refers to the fact that Arians likes to take some shots downfield. He can still throw it deep. We felt like the mobility was still the same as he's always had, which he's never been able to outrun anybody. But he certainly is good in the pocket in terms of eluding pressure. And with his poise and his instincts, we did not see a decline in his arm talent whatsoever. And in fact, we feel like he could still play for over 2 years for us, and hopefully that's the case. Well, they gave him 2 years for 60-whatever million dollars. So, yeah, I would think and hope that they plan on him playing for a couple of years, because that's a Super Bowl or bust kind of move. That's we're only doing that move because we expect to try to be in the Super Bowl for all of it. Asked about the strong comments that Arians made about Antonio Brown, Light said, we feel like there's a lot of teams that are struggling to find one really good wide receiver, and we have two really outstanding receivers in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Right now, there's only so much money that can go around. There are no plans to sign any other receiver at this time. Antonio is somebody that Bruce has come out and had some words about, and Bruce knows him better than all of us. So right now, I would just say that we're focused on other areas of our teams. And look, for all the talent Antonio Brown has, it's going to be interesting to see if somebody decides to roll the dice on, because here you've got an ideal guy in Bruce Arians, players coach all the way. Guys love playing for Bruce Arians. Doesn't seem like he's the toughest guy in the world, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean from a disciplinarian standpoint, but listen, he put up with Jameis Winston for an entire season. And by all accounts, he's done everything he can to try to help Jameis Winston get another job in the NFL as a starting quarterback. So the fact when he comes out and says, hey, Antonio Brown's just not a guy that we want in our locker room and part of our culture, that should tell you a lot, right? That should say a lot of something about what people think of Antonio Brown. And he can take all the shots he wants at Julio, but here's the reality. Julio's still in the league and still making plays and still an integral part of a team that's trying to get back to a Super Bowl. And speaking of trying to get back to the Super Bowl, as the Atlanta Falcons are trying to get back there, lots of reports, and we talked about it earlier in the Falcon flyover, about the fact of people saying that the Falcons may very well trade back in the NFL draft. But I ask the question, is there really value for the Falcons in trading back in this draft? We'll talk about that next, and I'll answer it next. John Chuckery here, hanging out with you on a Monday night, taking you to 11 o'clock, Sports Radio 910 The Game, and on the Radio.com app.
Love and happiness.
Sports Radio 910 The Game. Back on the John Chuckery Show. Taking it till 11 o'clock. It is the Brown Liquor Music Hour as we roll along. 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That's also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to be a part of the show. And we'll ask you certainly to leave some comments for the next segment that we will be talking about. Follow us on social media. By the way, download your Radio.com app. Make sure you got that first, because in these times where we know you're not on the road nearly as much in your car, you want to be able to listen to us and not miss anything that goes on with the show. So go to your radio.com app and download it. Social media for the stations at 929 The Game. It's Instagram, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, all the platforms there to be a part of the show and interact. The best way to catch up with us is through our social media pages. I am at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He is back in Midtown producing the show at JarvisD90, at JarvisD90. So we were talking about Nate Davis of USA Today, one of the guys talking about how the Falcons will look to move back in the NFL draft, okay? And look, one thing about Thomas Dimitrov is the fact that he's not shy about trying to make moves on draft night. But the reality is that Thomas Dimitrov has never moved back in an NFL draft. Now, he's moved up several times, but he's never moved back in the first round of an NFL draft. I would definitely hope that he doesn't decide to do that this year. And I say that because, you know, in a lot of years, you know, you could look at the Falcons and say, okay, well, they've got several holes to fill. You know, they need a linebacker. They need a corner. You know, they need another pass rusher. You know, some people would say, ah, we need to go draft a left guard or whatever like that. Yeah, there are spots to fill. But the reality is that this team is not going to fill all of its needs in one draft. In one draft, it's not going to fill all of the spots that it needs to fix. And along with that, the fact that they don't need a collection of maybe borderline, are they going to be great or not great players, they need a definite home run or two. And in a different year where the Falcons had won the Super Bowl back in 2016, a lot of this conversation could be different because they, you know, would have more time to be patient and things like that. But reality is that because they didn't win the Super Bowl and now jobs are on the line, they've got to figure out a way to hit a home run in this draft. And whether that's they can find one at 16 or they got to move up and they got to sacrifice. But if the Falcons can find one real home run hitter to make an impact right away, that to me is just as important as anything else as far as trying to build for the long term or value or anything. Give me one guy who's an elite player. If that's Simmons or Derrick Brown or Kinlaw, or you want to go up and get Chase Young, whatever you want to put next to that name. And I don't have a problem if the Falcons go up to get their guy and their valuation says that this guy is the next star. If that's C.J. Henderson, for instance, and you say that, okay, the Falcons need a starting cornerback. He's the best corner in the draft. We have to go up to 9 to get him or whatever. Okay, go get your guy. Now, we'll certainly be here to critique the pick and talk about it and see what it does. But make sure that if you're going up or whatever, if you decide, hey, let's go up and, hey, let's go get C.J. Henderson or whatever the pick may be, that that guy's a home run. I don't care if you're moving up one spot. Go get you a home run in that first round. And that's why I just don't think that trading back finds them what they need at impact right away. You know, the more you get away from the Chase Youngs and the Derrick Browns and the Isaiah Simmons and guys like that that look to be immediate difference makers, you know, the more it's a roll of the dice for some of these guys. You know, I like Murray, the kid out of Oklahoma, but there's, you know, some questions about him. Once you get past C.J. Henderson at corner, you know, there's some other guys, you know, some of the kids at LSU and such that have some questions. And once you certainly get past Chase Young, when you talk about pass rusher, there's a myriad of questions that go along with it. So I think it's one of those situations where for the Falcons and their situation that there's not a ideal situation to move back and go load up on picks. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago when Thomas Dimitrov was on the station, he said, quote, I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting action between picks 10 and 20. And again, I would never count us out because, again, we're a team that has been active in past drafts. That said, it's one of those draft situations where given some depth in some of these positions, it does set up the opportunity to potentially move back. And, you know, as long as I've been here, we've not been real active. We've not been a real active team at moving back. But, again, this may be one of those years. Now, me personally, if I'm reading between the lines, that's smoke and mirrors from Thomas. that's Dimitrov playing a little bit because that's the kinds of things that he's going to say. I'll go by what his history is versus what his words and things like that are. You know, what he tells me about, well, you know, we could move back because you're not committing to anything at that point. But the reality is on draft day, he's been a guy to move up. And I'll say, if they have a guy that they identify that they really like, I'm okay if you're going to get it. Now, it may not be the guy that I like. Everybody's got a guy, right? I've got my guys. Jarvis has his guys. You have your guys. Falcons have their guys. So I get it. Everybody's got their guys. But make sure that you hit that home run, especially in that first round. You know, I know Arthur talked about a few years ago, we got to get three starters in the draft and this, that, and the other. I'm not looking for that right now. If the Falcons are going to be a let's win now team and they've loaded up on offense, and the reality is that, you know, since you're not going to fix all the holes, you'll get by at left guard. You'll get by maybe at defensive tackle. You'll get by, I don't know, corner somehow. You know, if you're not drafting one of those guys. I still do believe, though, that they're going to draft corner in the first round. I have this sneaking suspicion that they're going to go get one of those SEC corners, and that's going to be the guy that they're going to take, whether that's Henderson or who's the other kid out of LSU. But I think that they're going to lean more toward corner in this draft. Why? I think it's also a position that those guys feel more comfortable about picking it. Let's face it. I mean, when it comes to defensive tackle and defensive line and things like that, that's not exactly been the most strong suit of this drafting regime and of Thomas Dimitrov's career to this point. So if you can get, you know, to their comfort level, that's when you get further away from the football, which that's why I think it suggests corner, and especially for the fact of they probably in some ways feel like they've addressed their pass rush by going to get Dante Fowler, even though, truthfully, that's not enough to make me feel good and say, okay, we're set at that. And I don't care where the pass rush comes from. You can tell me that they go get an interior guy, they go get a linebacker that can sack the quarterback. I don't really care as far as where you tell me that they're going to get that additional pass rush from. The idea is that they just have to have another guy who can go do that. They have to have another guy who can have a job that sacks the quarterback. Because Tack probably gets hurt at some point and misses some games. Or he doesn't perform. Or, you know, a foul or something like that, misses a game or two. You want to have somebody who's the legitimate guy that can step in and also be part of the rotation as well. But if that means Derrick Brown at defensive tackle to pair up with Grady Jarrett, then fine. I'm good with that too. Or if that means Isaiah Simmons on the outside, he plays some safety, he plays some end, he plays some linebacker, I'm fine with that too. Just give me a guy who can go sack the quarterback, but I don't like the idea of moving back. And that seems to be a popular opinion about some of the draft nudniks about where this team is going with their draft pick. Because it's easy to say, well, you know, they got many places they got to fill. Yeah, but they don't have to worry about trying to fill all those if they don't win this year. And I think that changes the game of everything. And that's the difference between a franchise that won their Super Bowl and a franchise that didn't win their Super Bowl. Because as I said, if this franchise had won their Super Bowl, then the conversation is completely different. Conversation about Thomas and Dan and everybody is completely different. And that conversation about how long they have and how they can approach the draft and how they approach free agency and everything else, it's completely different. But they didn't. So now you got to go find the best possible player. And I wonder if the Falcons decide to move up, how high would they be willing to go? How big of a dice roll are they willing to have in this draft to go get the guy that they want? And maybe they don't have to go very far. And maybe they will just kind of sit back and watch and see if some of these teams decide to draft quarterback and move up, you know, and use a lot of their assets to go get a guy that they don't have to worry about drafting. I mean, obviously they're not looking for, you know, an offensive tackle. They're not looking for a quarterback. I don't think they're looking at running back, wide receiver, obviously, in the first round. None of those positions are in play. There's a very few and a very limited amount of positions that they're going to be looking at in the first round of the draft. So should be some good stuff, but I really do hope that the Falcons decide to move themselves up and stick with what Thomas has always done and move himself up in the draft. And that started with, you know, the first draft that had Matt Ryan in it, where they moved to get Sam Baker, to Julio, to even last year to go get Caleb McGarry, moving up in this draft. especially now that they've loaded up on their offense, because I truthfully don't think that they have an offensive spot that they need to draft in the first round. And you may say guard, but like I said, they're going to try to solve that through one of their guys. At some point on your team, you have to solve some of your problems with the roster of guys that you had. If you're going to have Carpenter and Brown and Gonneau, and you're going to pay those guys what you pay them, then at some point, one of those guys has to figure it out. You can't just say, well, those guys didn't get it done. We invested all this money. Now let's go burn another draft pick or sign another free agent. You got to use the guys that you have in house. And like I said, we made the Super Bowl with Chris Chester at guard. Certainly those guys can't be that much worse than what Chris Chester was at times in that Super Bowl year. And, of course, we talked with Josh Alper about the NFL draft and the presentation of it and how it's all going to look, maybe with Roger Goodell just sitting at his presidential desk and just sipping on Dom Perignon and having people just, you know, minions just come to him and hand him picks, and he'll just sit at the what would be great is if he did like the Vince McMahon thing where he was like at that table when Vince had that table in the ring where he fell over in the chair, just Roger Goodell, feet propped up on a table, smoking a cigar, drinking some brown liquor, just announcing picks and just kind of chillaxing with all of it. Not taking it too seriously and just having some fun with it all. That would be great. That would be the way to get the NFL draft some life to it, you know. Even though they're not going to be in Vegas and it won't be any kind of big presentation, let Roger Goodell just sit there with like some stogies and some liquor and his feet propped up on a desk and he's in a big, you know, reclining chair and he basically looks like Vince McMahon out there. All right, when we get back, Jarvis and I have each put together our all-time NFL team based upon some social media arguments I saw last week. We'll give you our rosters, and you can tell us who you think has the best one. It's coming up next. Chuck Reed hanging out with you on a Monday night from Parts Unknown. Sports Radio, Night on the Game, and on the Radio.com app. Come here live. I've been searching for someone. Hey, Atlanta United supporters, we are going to replay Atlanta United radio broadcast from the big three, from the big matches, sorry, in 2018 in our Road to MLS Cup broadcast over the next 3 weekends. Tune in this Saturday at 5 p.m. for Atlanta United at LA Galaxy from April of 2018. And tune in this Sunday at 5 p.m. for Atlanta United at Orlando City from August of 2018. Back on the John Chuckery Show. Taking you to the top of the hour. Don't forget the Radio.com app to download it and be a part of the show. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. And we encourage you to text us because, well, we'll talk about it in just a second here, but follow us on social media as well and check out us out on social media at 929 The Game for the station, as you'll want to leave a comment there for what we're about to talk about as well. At JMCH316, he is at JarvisD90. So last week on Twitter, as we're going through all of these lists and things like that and people trying to come up with content, things like that, I saw some NFL players along with fans talking about who the best safeties were in the history of the NFL, and guys were all over the board with some of the names. I mean, from Ronnie Lott to Ed Reed to Brian Dawkins to Sean Taylor. I mean, take your pick on what some of the guys were out there. So it inspired me. I thought Jarvis and I would have a little bit of fun that we would put together our all-time NFL team. So, some similarities, some differences to all of it, but let's see what you think and leave us a comment on our Twitter, also on the text line as well. So, for quarterback, Jarvis had Peyton Manning and I had Tom Brady. Now, I'm all about, I think that the most important, and I think Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time, and so much of it has to do with the fact that he's won more than any quarterback in the history of the league. Now, he may not be all-time stats or this, that, and the other, but the NFL is remembered about how many Super Bowls did you win. Nobody remembers how many passing yards Terry Bradshaw had. Nobody remembers how many touchdown passes Troy Aikman had, but they do remember that Terry won 4 Super Bowls and that Troy Aikman won 3 Super Bowls. And that's the same thing with Brady. Now, Jarvis had Peyton Manning as his quarterback. And I say all the time, I think Peyton Manning played the quarterback position better than anybody in the history of the NFL. What do I mean by that versus he's the best quarterback? When you talk about playing the position with arm strength, accuracy, acumen, football IQ, audible ability, just when you talk about all the things that go into playing quarterback, I think he did it better than anybody, the entire package. But I give the nod because Brady was the biggest winner. I don't care if it's because of coach or whatever. Brady was there and had to get it done and did things that, from a winning standpoint, that we'll probably never see again in the NFL. Truthfully, I mean, we'll never probably see the kind of 20-year run that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick had with that Patriots team. Running back, Jarvis decided to go with Barry Sanders and LaDainian Tomlinson. I go with Emmitt Smith and Jim Brown. LT, one of the great two-way players on offense of all time. Barry Sanders, of course, nothing needs to be said about that. It is fascinating the fact that Barry Sanders has the most negative yardage plays as a running back in the history of the NFL. And let's face it, he ran behind some not-so-good lines and was a guy who was always looking for that big, big play. Take a loss for a yard on first down, a couple-yard loss on second down, and then could go third down and go 65 yards downfield and score a touchdown. That's the kind of explosive player that he was. I did not see Jim Brown play, but between my dad and everybody else that you will ever find that actually did and was around, and especially up in that part of the world, a lot of guys will tell you that Jim Brown's the greatest football player of all time. Just pure football player of all time. I think Jerry Rice and Dick Butkus and Lawrence Taylor all fall into that as well. But a lot of people tell you that Jim Brown is the greatest football player that ever lived. And based upon what people told me, I don't really have an argument for that. I think he led the league every year but one in rushing. I still think he's either one or two all time in yards per carry in the NFL. And you think about it, he led the league in rushing and left the league to go make movies and do all that other stuff that he left on his own terms and decided that he'd had enough. Now, he had spats with ownership and coaching and things like that as well and just didn't want to continue to go. Emmitt, I think, is one of the most clutch players in the history of the NFL. I think when you talk about big-time game players, I think there are a few guys that you would take over Emmitt Smith. Now, Jarvis went with a three-wide receiver set. I went with two wide receivers and a tight end. He took Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, and Larry Fitzgerald. I took Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, and Rob Gronkowski at tight end. And I'll say, as far as tight end goes, I think Gronk was the biggest mismatch in the history of the NFL. I don't think that you could cover him. You couldn't cover him with the linebackers. You couldn't cover him with the corners. You couldn't cover him with safeties. He was too big, too fast, and too good of a route runner for all of those guys. Now, with Jarvis's list, Terrell Owens is still probably a guy that, because of all the outside stuff, doesn't get nearly enough credit for how great of a football player that he was. Jerry Rice, not really much needs to be said there. He may be in the discussion for greatest football players of all time. We both have Randy Moss. There was nobody like Randy Moss in his first few years in the NFL. When that hand went up, as a defensive back, you just didn't have a shot at that point. As long as the quarterback could throw it out there to him, and he didn't, you know, did not run the pass, there was no play in football like the Randy Moss sprinting down the sideline, hand in the air, huck it downfield to him. Offensive line, and this is where kind of age will show the difference between Jarvis and I. Walter Jones and Orlando Pace at tackle, Larry Allen and Nate Newton at guard, Dermonte Dawson at center. I've got Mike Webster at center. I've got John Hanna and Larry Allen at guard, Orlando Pace and Anthony Munoz at tackle. And I will tell you that I think Anthony Munoz is the best tackle in the history of the NFL. If you look, I think in 11 years he went to 10 Pro Bowls. Was an amazing player. I think made the 80s All-Decade team. Just a dominant force. I've said many times before, I think John Hanna and Larry Allen are the two best guards by far in the NFL. And Larry Allen might be in the running for the best offensive lineman that ever played in the NFL. I think Munoz in that discussion. I think Larry Allen's in that discussion when you talk about the best offensive lineman that ever played in the NFL. Now, switching over to defense, along the defensive line, Jarvis has Reggie White and Julius Peppers at defensive end, Warren Sapp and Gilbert Brown at defensive tackle. I've got Reggie White as well, and I'll partner him up with Bruce Smith. Talk about two dominant forces in the NFL during their time, Smith and White, two of the best football players I've ever seen. Defensive tackle, this is where you get into an age thing. I have John Randall, and I have Mean Joe Green, two-time defensive player of the year in the NFL. I think people talk about the Coke commercial and talk about all the guys that made up that Steeler defense. You know, Lambert and Ham are in the Hall of Fame. Mel Blount's in the Hall of Fame. Donnie Shell's going to the Hall of Fame. Mean Joe Green is in the Hall of Fame. So many guys that are Hall of Fame players. But Mean Joe Green was a tremendous football player. And I don't think people maybe that aren't old remember how great and how dominant of a defensive lineman that he was. You can't dumb your way to two NFL player defensive player of the year awards. At linebacker, Lawrence Taylor, Ray Lewis, Derek Thomas. For Jarvis, I'm close. Ray Lewis, Lawrence Taylor, and I've got Derek Brooks. I think Ray Lewis speaks for himself, and Lawrence Taylor, again, if we're talking about the five best football players that ever went onto a field, I've never seen anybody more dominant than what Lawrence Taylor was. Defensive backs, Deion Sanders and Champ Bailey, with Ed Reed and Sean Taylor for Jarvis. I have Deion Sanders and Mike Haynes with Ed Reed and Ronnie Lott at safety. And I tell people all the time, if you didn't see how good Mike Haynes was when he played in New England and played for the Raiders on some of those Super Bowl teams when he partnered up with Lester Hayes, he was one of the most dominant cover corners. Now, two guys that I had a hard time leaving off. One is a defensive back. The more that I hear about him and from players that played against him, including guys like Randy Mack, is Darrell Revis and how great of a cover corner Darrell Revis really was. And we may look back on him, you know, a little bit differently as time passes, like we do a lot of guys. The other person that I've said before, the guy that I thought was the best offensive weapon, offensive player in his prime that I've ever seen is Marshall Faulk. A guy who could run the football, a guy who could play in the slot, a guy who could split out wide and be a wide receiver. He could do everything on offense. He was a dominant offensive player, as good as anybody I've seen. Kind of a hard guy to have to try to leave off of your lifts, but unfortunately, I still take Emmitt, I still take James Brown, or, sorry, James Brown, because we're in the Brown Liquor Music Hour, Jim Brown over him. All right, when we get back, speaking of the Brown Liquor Music Hour, it will be time to wrap things up tonight. The Love TKO coming your way. We'll get ready to wrap up the show. It is John Chuckery hanging out with you here on a Monday night, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and on the radio.com app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.